After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Hey, listeners. Welcome back to Greenhouse Gaslighting, the show where we reject conventional wisdom in favor of common sense. Or will we? I'm joined with anthropology and archaeology expert and just all-around good guy, Jeff. So, in the last episode, we had talked about what are some of the ways to give action meaning, especially when we're kind of addled with staying on social media. And towards the end of the episode, I had brought up community farming, but it has occurred to me quite spectacularly, I know nothing about community farming, and Jeff has been so kind to explain. Jeff, you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry about that. Yes. I've been part of community farming, well, the community supported agriculture in Oxford for quite a bit now, since I was in high school, actually. It's quite a life-changing experience to be able to just go to a farm and, you know, work a share and gain produce there. It's a strong community experience, I would think.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the discussion surrounding, you know, what particularly on the left or in activist spaces, there's the big push about talking about dual power, where you build your own power outside of the system or your own means of independence, so you're not reliant on the structure around you. And community farming seems to pop up as a hot topic in that discussion. So with regards to some of, you know, your deeper analysis, do you think community farming is a step in that direction, or is that just a conversation that everyone seems to engage in?
I think it's a bit of a combination of both, and there is a reason for it. I think it is, I think it's partially a conversation everybody likes to get into because it is so prolific, and prolific for many reasons. You have from the World War I and World War II era, you have victory farms, you know, across the world, where it would be like, you know, providing surplus vegetables and other commodities for soldiers in the war. And I think it's just, such a need from different vantage points, because community gardening is a massive topic. You can have community gardening where it's the fact where it will be just for beautifying a city, like greening of Detroit, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It just has so much multifaceted purposes and interests that are outside the traditional system. And yes, very grassroots.
I see. I'm not sure how to follow that one up. I mean, you kind of laid that one up pretty nice, but what? So describe to me like your start with community gardening. What was what pushed you to it? Was it something that your family did, or was it just something that was available to you growing up? What got you in?
Well, I suppose like any, you know, circle that you are part of, you know, it's usually family, and it's definitely family for me as well that got me into it. It is such a help that, you know, the farm that I'm near, the nearest closest to, provides that opportunity. And, you know, I've been going there since I was a kid. So it's just something that just pulls you in eventually, you know. A lot of people I have met there either has taken their kids to the farm on field trips, you know, through school or what have you, see. So it's like already a tight-knit community.
So quite literally, it's in the title, community farming. The community
yes.
Will pull you in one way or another. Fair enough.
I don't know how else to explain it better.
No, I mean that makes sense, because it's one of those things that it's an activity, and like it's you know, brought to us as like the answer to a problem or like a thing that looks good, especially like you see it a lot in those marketing materials for different universities, or like if there's like a neoliberal mayor, they love like having B-roll of young people doing community farming, right?
No. It's like it's almost pushing our face. It's like I love it to death. And my parents, you know, brought me to the CSA at Upland Hills Farm, and it has been a wonderful occasion doing all that. And then I go to Wayne State and Oakland University, and I'm like, oh, colleges do it too.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of comes back around and reinforces itself.
So at least in terms of it being an activity, it's, you know, with the little space that it seems to acquire, where you can say, hey, I want a community farm, and if it's your company or your university, it seems like a nice thing enough that people will let you do it in the dark, even, and you can get some photos out of it. Fair enough.
Pretty much. Farm itself is Upland Hills, and it's a full 8-acre farm that we grow produce on.
Okay, and you've talked to me about Upland Hills before, but I'm still kind of in the dark. So do you want to tell us about, you know, Upland Hills, where it is, who founded it, what kind of stuff you guys grow?
Yeah, so Upland Hills Farm is your typical farm. It has a large, like, petting zoo and, you know, popular with the kids and such. It was founded by, I believe, the Webster family, because now it's owned by Ken Webster and his siblings.
Okay.
And that's been in the farm for I don't know how long. The CSA portion of the farm itself, that's away from, you know, the more business, you know, ventures of like weddings, celebrations, festivals and such. The CSA itself is an offshoot of it. And we plant a large variety of crops, a lot of lettuces, a lot of greens, a lot of root vegetables. I mean, it's vegetables for day. I mean, it covers my entire counter on some of those pickup days.
Mm-hmm. And of the folks who participate in the farm or the broader community, how many people participate and how many people are able to take the products of that farm back with them?
Right. So this is specific to my farm, right? And many different community farming initiatives have different price ranges, if they have a price range or if they're doing out of the goodness of their own heart with a nonprofit, whatever. There's so many methods to the success here, if you follow me.
Got you. And then at your farm, like, who shows up? Is it just folks who are part of the organization? Is it just whoever comes and participates? Members. Just members? Okay.
Yeah. It's like a working share. You have working shares. And then, you know, I would say, like, there's an 8-week work share, let's say, and that might be a couple hundred. And then there's like a 16-week share that's not working. That's, you know, like triple that. It all kind of depends, though.
And what do you mean by share?
Oh, the shares are about, the shares are kind of dependent on how much produce there is that is split up between the members of who has owned a share.
Okay.
The plots, basically it's all divided up.
So it kind of functions like a cooperative in that case.
Best way to describe
it. Okay.
Is a cooperative that you're going to either put money in and throw a little work into it or just throw the money into it and get the share.
Got you. So in practical terms, with you and your family participating at this farm, and, you know, it sounds like you guys do get a bit of a sizable bounty. Mm-hmm. Would you say it's effective in, at least, you know, at your individual household level, in gaining some food independence, or are you guys still dominant on things like supermarkets and things like that?
Well, that is a good question, because in wintertime, we're definitely dominant on going to the market, just because growing season isn't happening then. So it's really depending on how effective it is. is. It's very what's the term? It is very not geospatial, geographical determinant.
Mm-hmm. And living in the temperate Midwest, that can definitely affect the growing season and just how effectively you can harvest things. Of course,
right. So it varies all over the place. You know, you're not going to have the same acreage in New York City, for instance.
Right, and then they would have to rely on either whatever empty plots they can find or rooftops or what have you.
Which they do. It's wonderful what you can do with stack farming, which is a whole other type of, farming style and community organizing sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So I will admit I'm a bit of a normie when it comes to this discussion, and I do appreciate you having this discussion. So I think the question I was maybe hoping to get into or maybe discuss is, how community farming has kind of become the only avenue by which everyday people really interact with the process of growing their own food or learning how, agricultural crops, kind of come into their own. And it just seems apparent that like the average person has no idea where their food actually comes from. It's a kind of set it and forget it situation where you head to the supermarket, you pick it up, you consume, and you're not even obligated to read the packaging label of what or where it came from.
Oh, agreed 100%. What is those large statistics, like 20, 30% or whatever, I'm spitballing here, produce that gets thrown out at the end of the day because, one of those lettuces are wilted or something. It's obscene that they have to stock the shelves so thick when there are people who need that produce.
Right, and that also comes up as, what ends up getting sold in stores is what's comparatively pretty compared to, I mean, if you've worked with plants before, you'll know that like what you see in the supermarket isn't exactly alike to what you can grow in your own yard. And of the things that do come off of farms, not all of them come off even. Like we think of potatoes as, let's say, perfect little brown ovals, and you come off and they can look pretty monstrous. And that's your standard. You know what I mean?
No, I completely understand what you mean. I've had like carrots come out of the ground at Upland Hills Farm, and it's like strange growths, like three-pronged carrots at the end. Things that people just don't regularly pick up in the market. When you think of a carrot, you just think of this, this average out length that they pick through some kind of sorting machine, I'm sure. It has to look presentable. Has to look like what's on the package.
Mm-hmm. It has to look like what people think a carrot is, even though a carrot doesn't know what it's supposed to look like.
Right. And it's strange because it just makes me think on just how much, because we always hear the numbers on how much of these produce is thrown out, but it's just like it's hard to guess the volumes of it if they want some form of exclusivity.
Mm-hmm. So with regards to how the members at your farm distribute the produce, do you think there's less waste because it's, you have to take that personally and you don't have the luxuries that a retail chain has when it comes to keeping produce fresh?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And you really start to not mind it. Maybe you might be a little selective here and there because it's kind of first come, first served, but nothing goes to waste in the same sense. There's also a free pick too, which might actually help stores if you think about it.
Right. I'm trying to recall because grocery stores kind of rely on whoever can take their waste product, and it's kind of become a new market in of itself, right? Where I think there's like subscription services that will send you produce that got rejected. So they found a way. Yeah. And like, I know that at least some stores used to, either give those to animal care or food provision centers, things like that. And now they've even found a way to monetize that. So it's interesting how they've managed to bring the market into all of this. But do you think, the community farm will still continue to be like one of the true commons we can kind of have as a community, or do you see the market finding its way into there?
Like all things grassroots, I think that it will more or less hold as where it is, and I think it's always going to be around in some form or another. I don't see, because I consider Grinning of Detroit as a form of community gardening, mm-hmm. even though it's not for eating purposes. And I haven't seen anybody trying to challenge them yet to be bought. Not anything I can think of recently. Community gardening is so varied and is such a wide definitions. You know, your community gardening can be you and your friends in your basement growing God knows what. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like you'd have to figure out how to completely, like, you'd have to figure out how to take over the individual agencies of communities. And it's been an attempt.
Right. And it might become one of those things that's necessary, because as people our generation tend to increasingly be pushed into renting more, owning your own little plot of land and working it is just increasingly, I mean, in the push to suburbanization, right? Mm-hmm. We're pushed away from the rural area. We're still a comfortable distance away from the city. I guess that was the goal of it, right? And what you have is just this little splotch of turf grass that God knows what you do with aside from mow the lawn. And I mean, even like those Eastern European practices of like dacha, where you kind of grow your own stuff for subsistence, even that doesn't seem to exist in the American consciousness. So I kind of worry that as we slowly start to come into our own, and if millennials are fortunate enough to start families, right? Like, how do we have systems of providing food for people that aren't reliant on big agribusiness and just this removal of understanding where food is made from, how it's produced, how it's grown, and just the knowledge of agriculture? I don't think that it should belong to anyone specifically. I think that belongs to everyone. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree 100%. It really should belong to everybody. Everybody should have the ability and access to grow their own food if they so will. Please, it is the cornerstone of human food production since the Neolithic, more or less, unless if you have the access to a large river or a body of water.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that will always be with us. I don't think it will be something that will necessarily be all bought by Monsanto.
God willing, I hope, you know, because you know, the darker history is that, you know, you go to a the darker reality we could end up in is you go to a Monsanto brand community farm and you donate your labor to grow Monsanto brand produce using their tools and stuff. And that's also frightening because, I mean, isn't that functionally what the nation's farmers are kind of getting into right now?
Oh, yeah.
And what they're trying to prevent in countries like India, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think it is absolutely frightening that you have to have a license to grow organic. A bunch of Monsanto farms are popping up, and they somehow pay less with the pesticides that are made in a lab.
Yeah, it's something that I find interesting, and I have to accept here that I'm not an expert on agriculture or economics. So, you know, don't at me, but at me. in the way that, you know, we hear about small businesses or you know, sellers online kind of either being co-opted by Amazon or being basically bought out by Amazon entirely. It's also frustrating to look at that. Like, we really don't hear about small farmers as much as we used to anymore. And I think it's just the reliance on, or rather like just you know, being in serfdom in a sense to John Deere, Monsanto, and others. It's an Amazonization of another industry that we're also divorced from. Because if you do live in the suburbs or the city, you have next to no idea how to cultivate any of this, nor how it's cultivated.
Right. It's to tackle this problem, I say it's a I think it's a two-pronged strategy. One, politics has to be done. Two, it has to be a grassroots movement. You have to attack the problem from below and above.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of just how big these companies are. Used to be that we can just, you know, go out and do a boycott against something that is unethical. But with these internationals, they just move and set up shop somewhere else and then sell right back to us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely an asymmetrical strategy we have to consider.
Right, right. And I mean, and I guess that's, you know, the hope of trying to push for community farming is to, yeah, you know, have that kind of community bounty that you can share. As well as just, you know, keep that information and actually pass it person to person.
I'm always impressed by the ability, and sometimes depending on context, the lack of ability of social media. The amount of information we can just transfer to one another is absolutely obscene. Be it right or wrong, but for this, I think we can spread a really good message.
Mm-hmm.
With the farming,
right? So I mean that's the tough part then. How do we get the property and how do we
mm-hmm.
I mean it just becomes the whole thing, right, of like if enough people pool their resources together to maybe start a farm and, you know, agree to work shifts and all that, maybe you can start. But I guess I don't know how did Upland Hills start? I know you said it started as a as an offshoot of another family's project, correct?
It is all under the same
thing. Okay.
It's just Ken, this is his brainchild, as it were.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, that's the thing, is it takes either the means or someone who already owns the property and then the, you know, the actual willingness to share it out and things, right?
Yeah, I have family members and I know people who will, you know, you know, this is more in the Midwest. I can't speak for anywhere else. But, you know, they'll, if they have enough land in their backyard, you know, they'll make a beautiful large garden that they'll eat from, you know, for a long time. And you know, I suppose, and I agree with you, it is difficult to find the right land, because it's not just about the right land. It is also make sure that your community farm doesn't exist next to like a chemical plant.
Mm-hmm.
You have to check the soil. You have to make sure that's technically organic too, if you want to do an organic farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because that takes a few years until all the chemicals get out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That takes remediation and stuff too, and I mean that's just how multifactorial it gets, right? But I don't know, because like, right, what's been presented to, you know, me and you as young leftists is, as oftentimes is like, when we see failures of the establishment order, or we see you know, especially among the more doom-minded folks we can kind of speak to sometimes, there is this big emphasis on the community farm as like a catch-all solution. And I kind of see where they're going with it, but there seems to be enough alienation in the society in which we live that almost kind of stops that project from going. So let's say, I mean, I don't know. Let's actually talk about, you know, our dream project of starting a farm, right? Like, how would we get around that, especially in the kind of alienated and low on resources generation that we're from, right? How would you start?
Um, I suppose my experience is a lot from an already organized, you know, large scale farm that I just, you know, buy into a share. You would have to go into. I guess my question is how big are you thinking?
Yikes. Okay, you got me there, right?
And what is that? What would the mission be? Because there's just so many different types of community garden.
That's fair. Let's say that we're trying to start a fresh food pantry for not only folks who want to participate and take some of the bounty, but for folks who are on hard times or are homeless or could just use the extra help to make ends meet periodically, and it would be a no questions asked type deal, right? How would we start that? And let's say it's a community of about, 20,000. Let's just say that for you know, the sake of this argument.
For sure. If you want to start a farm for about 20,000 people, I would one think that might need a few farms. I always say the best way to do it, especially if you're say in the Detroit area, is to go to the Grace Lee Boggs Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really go hard into how to start up an organization, how to fund said organization, and really provide strong grassroots startup
mm-hmm.
ideas. And I recommend this to anybody. Anybody who's listening, there are wonderful services out there like Boggs who can help with grassroots startup.
Mm-hmm.
And because they know and have all the connections to get something rolling.
Mm-hmm.
My best guess, you know, start small with community gardening. It can be as little as you and your friends, you know, having a little plot of land in your backyard that you put in a, you know, like how sometimes people will set up one of those the refrigerators for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely do that. You can also get with any, you know, already urban, if you're in the urban areas, get involved with any of the urban gardening initiatives, which I have not gotten myself into that as of yet. I've been to their ones in Detroit.
No, I'm guilty too. Like I know of one in my community that I could be participating in. I just don't have as much time. But I think that seems to be the other point you're getting at without meaning to, is you kind of have to overcome either the conditions preventing you from going or your own personal resistance to it, right?
Yes.
and I think that, you know, that's maybe one of the problems we face in a modern society, is that, you know, either we really are tired after, you know, dealing with our jobs and, you know, looking at our darn phones and just seeing what's going on and being like, ah, I don't want to deal with any of this anymore. And someone comes to you and says, hey, you want to work on our community farm? And you think, why would I want to do that? But when we do talk about the fact that this is a rewarding experience and that this is a way to concretely provide for people, even if it doesn't look like much, even though it looks like hard work, it is one of those things that even if the impact seems minimal, it's a concrete benefit no matter how you slice it. So I think that's just the other aspect to you know, to look at, is of our principles as leftists or as folks who just want to do well in our communities, right? I think this is at a bare minimum, maybe one of the ways you can really say you're doing something positive. And I know that I'm going to, especially, you know, as it gets warmer, ooh, and as the pandemic lifts, because I don't want to feel people to feel ashamed that, like, oh, you're not doing enough. It's a pandemic. It's winter here, especially. And I know people have obligations, but I think in addition to starting that, or, you know, starting a little project of your own, you also have to overcome your own resistance to change.
Yeah, that's half the battle. I have to say that with community gardening, every bit of it helps in my mind, because mm-hmm. even with, like, say, beautifying an area, sometimes areas just are filled with blight and run-down bridges and just unsightly concrete hells.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can think of a few of them, actually. What it does for people, commuters especially, just to see a patch of green that's more than just some turf.
Right, right. Because, I mean, we do live... in a certain extent in a society that seems to be decaying a little bit, and people always have that in the back of their minds, even if they're not, you know, consciously thinking that they live in a world that's decaying a little bit. I mean, we see it as businesses shut down, as jobs, you know, leave and things like that, you know, the symptoms of neoliberalism that you and I are familiar with. The signs of it are always visible in the back of our mind, and we seem to normalize them as we walk through them day to day. But I think you're right that, you know, in reclaiming some of these spaces, not only does the beautification, you know, help fight that stigma that we see, but it is a real way of, you know, seizing the means, as it were, even if it looks small.
Yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of work for a community to do. If you really want to get a community involved within community gardening, and you might not have the space to grow the food, beautify the land. Because, by gosh, a lot of these places, I've done Green Detroit on a couple occasions where you go out and plant trees, and what that does for the community when there's really not much else may seem small to everybody who's just kind of like on their phones, you know, taking life strides at a time, is so rewarding and so grateful to those who are participating in any, you know, beautification project, especially when it's grassroots.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and those projects feed into other issues, right? I mean, when we talk about biodiversity and the depletion of native species and invasives and things like that, then community gardening becomes really useful, right? Because not only does it serve as like a new social activity that helps break the alienation we feel day to day, right? It is a literal way to bring back pollinators, bring back some native wildlife, you know, make the area a little more beautiful, and also, you know, protect the local ecosystem. These things have stated value. Even if it feels like, you know, the broader picture is that things are a lot worse. Yeah, they totally are. But this is a direct way to combat it, even if it doesn't seem effective.
Oh, definitely. The networking and the friendships and the community strengthening that goes on with such projects of any community gardening. Because as I said, there's like dozens of types of community gardenings out there. And that strengthening a bond of the community helps so much, because when times get tough, if the community supports one another, it stays strong.
Mm-hmm.
It stays really strong.
So in that sense, the farm itself is kind of a means to an end, right? it's not just that we're, you know, we have an activity or that, you know, we're using it to grow the food. It also reinforces itself in that way. Just as you mentioned that you get sucked into it one way into another, same way it sucks you back into it.
Right, right. Everybody has these kind of things. Either it be your church community or community gardening or heck, even the union.
Right, right, which is eventually what we want folks to get back into, right?
Right. I mean, what are we speaking of? We're speaking of trade unions and co-ops.
Effectively speaking, yeah. And I think, you know, if it's one way to... Because what seems to characterize folks these days in terms of their relationship to the economy is far less than producing things, which is what you do when you farm, right? Is you are actually producing a commodity. But most people's relationship to not only food, but to resources and goods is consumption. So, I mean, kind of how we've talked about how, and I apologize for how disorganized this discussion might have been, but we're spitballing after last week. I kind of just wanted to have a relaxed conversation, right? But yeah, so in the same way that a lot of folks don't seem to know about where their food comes from, I mean, this applies to all manner of consumer goods at that point, right?
Well, we do live in a consumer culture.
Absolutely.
Very unfortunate. Mind because it is so fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
Every moment you buy something, that's kind of the end of it until you show it for a conversational piece in your
life. Right, right. And I mean, it's to the point where like going to the store is the fun thing to do sometimes, right? especially in the pandemic, sometimes you know folks were just going to the store because it was the only fun thing to do. I don't blame them entirely, but you could have gone for a walk in the park too, right?
Malls are packed, especially Great Lakes Crossing.
Right, right. No, and it's starting to become like apparent that, you know, the amount of social places or things that people can go just to have fun for its own sake, it's starting to reduce somewhat, and we're kind of getting pushed into you go to work and then you go to consume. And I think, you know, the community farm probably is the jolt of reality a lot of people need, even if it's not directly political, or even, you know, if we're not reading Marx and Bakunin as we farm, right?
Right.
you start to get, you know, intimately acquainted with the idea of labor and the idea of you know, sharing the produced goods with your community. So I think it's essential in that regard, right?
Oh, I agree 100%. I find the alienating effects of consumer culture is... I think it's completely understated in this country. I think it is almost heartbreaking. And I say that because when my grandfather came here into this country from Macedonia in 1918, you know, he had a community after coming off of Ellis Island. Macedonians and the Macedonians brought him in, brought him to Detroit, you know, and these tight-knit communities from Europe, you know, they helped and supported each other in times of great strife and led to success as well, because this is right up during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
And during the recession, a lot of people fell to community and family ties, like fell into working together.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it as a very strong possibility for here too.
Right, right. And I think that's just, you know, the reality of it, that you have to build solidarity. You have to, you know, be together with people in times of crisis. It's not enough to just, you know, have this increased individualized culture that we're having in the United States, where, you know, I got mine and I don't care what happens to anyone else. I think there needs to be an increased sense of sharing, sportsmanship, being concern for the well-being of others. I don't think those should be seen as weaknesses or things, or also as a luxury. I don't think that that's something that you should only do after taking care of yourself. That's one of those things that it shouldn't be a cost. You know what I mean? Whether you survive or whether someone else survives, that's a false choice. Everyone should. You know what I mean?
Definitely. No, I agree. And it seems very antithetical to what I've been raised on and what the country has portrayed, you know. But we believe that, you know, this country is for the hardworking class, the solidarity and support we give one another. And
but,
if so,
Well, that's actually left not only like the public identity, but like in the images of Americana, or when you talk about conservative rhetoric, right? I think they really love to hanker on individual rights and freedom and success more than they do about community. Community seems to have entirely left the American aesthetic now.
Oh yeah. It feels like it just absolutely just disappeared. Yeah. It's unfortunate because I'm recalling, you know, either movies or, and movies had a could come out of very can also come out of a left bias too, but to me it has always been in the 60s and 50s, you know, especially during the Cold War, about how to fight for your unity. And, you know, there was a lot more community basis then.
Right. I mean, we also had a little bit more of a militant union movement and groups that, you know, actually push some of that hegemonic control. But that's kind of been neutered lately.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Right. And I think, you know, the goal still remains the same, that what seems to be lacking, not only in the discourse, I say scare quotes, but when everyone says they're part of the left, or, you know, that they give prescriptions for how the left should act, or however it is, right? Very little is given in the way of actual community oriented approaches, or solidarity, or even the dimension of, you know, caring about people. I think that gets left on the table a lot, and I think that's a selling point to actually get people on board, right?
Oh yeah, I think it is. I think I feel like solidarity and working with each other, I mean, that is exactly what made the Black Panthers so successful,
and why it was so urgent to break them up, right?
I mean, a lot of reasons why it has been left on the table, and I may, you know, be out of my mind for saying this for some, but we got defeated hard. We got beaten by Reagan pretty badly. Mm-hmm. And I think there's that stigma of, you know, I hear murmurs of it here and there of like, well, I agree with, you know, socialist values, but I don't think we can ever get it across the board.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're not trying to bring back an aesthetic of socialism or a certain socialist politician's dreams per se, right? What we're really talking about is either top down trying to create the affect of a community that cares about one another, or having a society that seems to live up to that. That's really what the goal of this is to me.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, you know, we started with community farms, but I guess what we really ended up with is any action you take, even if it, you know, seems like it's local, or even if it seems that you're not solving the, you know, the global problems of climate change and wealth inequality, and, you know, me and you specifically, you know, we can't solve them on our own. It is going to take a collective effort. And that's really, you know, Jeff's prescription here, I'm assuming, is start at your community farm or what have you, right? But that little act of working in the community is your first step to that.
And it is such a thing to be proud of. Mm-hmm. It really is. I think people really underestimate what that does for your personal well-being, your mental well-being, and the community's well-being. Because I'm the type who always like kicks his feet around and goes, I really don't want to go to X event today, but when I'm there, I actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are in that boat, where it's just kind of like, oh, this was a little bit more fun than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're approaching about the top of the hour. Jeff, anything you want to end on, or anything you want to plug?
Well, hopefully this pandemic lets off soon. And also,
amen.
Just another thing. We were able to do the community garden during the pandemic. Yeah, we were. Unfortunately, that also does take into account with how big your garden is. Because social distancing can be a difficulty.
That's true. And I mean, you know, you can assume everyone's masked up and that could help, but I don't know. I get suspicious about folks who say keep a mask on and social distance, but a lot of times, especially like in stores and stuff, it's impossible with social distance. How do you do that? No, so the mask is the single most effective thing you have, unfortunately.
But when you have enough land for, you know, a large farm, and as I said before, get involved with the Mueller by Farm that's doing a CSA. They can definitely provide the means for social distancing in this time. Another thing I would like to say, everybody be safe. The vaccines are going to be coming out at some time.
Yeah, as soon as that happens, I'm gonna take it, inject it myself, and then I'm gonna go community farm with you.
Definitely. I guess I'll just say what I'm doing. I'm with the Buck Dinner, which has been around since the 1920s, and we are a decently sized organization in the Metro Detroit area, and what we do each year around March is host a dinner. Obviously, we can't host the dinner in person during the pandemic, but we raise money for local nonprofits and startups throughout the country, but mainly focusing on the Metro Detroit area.
Yeah, you can definitely check them out at their website or looking them up.
buckdinner.org.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks again for tuning in, listeners. You can check us out on Twitter at @podgreenhouse or Greenhouse Gaslighting on Facebook. Subscribe to us on YouTube. We are now on a bunch of streaming platforms, so you can find us on your favorite platforms. Generally, I'm guessing folks will be on Spotify or Stitcher. But we're also on the iTunes store. So thanks for tuning in again. Stay safe.